Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. It's a rainy Tuesday morning here in Lower Manhattan. There are so many sports radio shows out there, so many podcasts, and we really appreciate you spending part of your Tuesday morning with us. Our man, Jay Will, will be back with you tomorrow morning. Look forward to having the entire trio back. The Cowboys are looking forward to getting back on the field again and wiping whatever happened last night. Just take it completely out. Short week, Washington football team in the division. Key, despite all of it, the loss to the Cardinals, the tying the worst ever loss at AT&T Stadium at that palace where they looked like paupers yesterday. They're still in first place in the NFC East. Unbelievable.
Burn the film. Don't even look at it.
Trash.
Yeah, it's not even something to look at. It's just, you know what it was. You saw it. You look pathetic. You stink. And that's basically how you sum it up. It's ridiculous that they've gone out and they've done so much to make this team relevant or this organization relevant again. Whether it's drafting CeeDee Lamb, whether it's getting a quality backup at the time in Andy Dalton. And I say at the time because based on what he showed us last night, it's like, geez.
That changed quick.
It did. I mean, it was just like, come on, man. You're better than this. You're a veteran player. You know how to do certain things. You should, when you see certain things happen, call timeout, slide blitzers, whatever the case may be, instead of sitting back there just playing just bad football. He played bad football last night. And I don't need to tell him that. He knows it. You can look at him when he walked off the field at some of those incomplete balls that he was throwing, picks he was throwing. I mean, it was ugly football all the way around. Ezekiel Elliott fumbling twice last night. Michael Gallup dropping a football that was clearly in his hands. Like, Michael Gallup is a professional football player. And when he dropped it, you know, I'm sitting at home by myself watching the game, and I'm saying to myself, this dude's a pro. This is what he's a football player. He's a receiver. All you have done your entire life is catch footballs. He couldn't even get his hands together. He was trying to figure out how to shape them and turn them. I was like, oh, my God. And then just, where's that coming from? Why is this happening to the Dallas Cowboys?
It's a great question that probably doesn't have an answer at this point. If it had an answer, Mike McCarthy would be going to it super quick. So you mentioned Ezekiel Elliott fumbling on back-to-back plays. Lewis Riddick on the call last night on Monday Night Football. He and Brian Griese, his partner on the air, always join Scott Van Pelt for the best breakdown right after the game on SportsCenter on ESPN. Essentially saying everything Key said in lockstep. This was completely and totally unacceptable.
If there's one thing every team is saying this year is this, we don't want to hear any excuses. And although their offensive line's been decimated and their defense has been poor, there's no excuse. You're in a weak division. Find a way to get it done. Because if you don't, you're going to be facing those same questions that really people ask of Dallas every year. What is going on down there? In the offseason, it's always Dallas has weapons. Dallas has all these guys that can score points. Dallas, 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 Dallas. And then they have a performance like this?
It's fair enough from Lou Riddick on Monday Night Football, joining Scott Van Pelt after the game with his thoughts. I think a lot of Cowboys fans echo them. The Cowboys haven't been to the playoffs in 25 years. Quick theory here, Key. Tell me what you think about this. I do feel like the Cowboys look like a fantasy team, not a reality team. The team in reality is just difficult, so Cowboys fans have to put themselves in a fantasy world. Your fantasy team has a disparate quarterback that has nothing to do with the wide receivers you draft, that has nothing to do with your running back, that has nothing to do with the defense you select. You look at the Cowboys and say, Lou said, decimated offensive line. Tyron Smith, who some people believe is the best offensive lineman in the NFL, out for the season. Lyle Collins didn't play a snap, another offensive lineman for the Cowboys. Zach Martin got hurt last night. And if those individual players, like you would have on a fantasy team, realizing you're not drafting linemen, if those individual players can't protect Andy Dalton, then Andy Dalton can't get the ball to Michael Gallup, can't get the ball to Amari Cooper, and that puts more pressure on Ezekiel Elliott. Is there something to be said that they may have some great individual players, Dak when healthy, again, Leighton Van Der Esch returned last night on the defensive side of the ball, but it's like the old saying in basketball, you got five fingers, but what's stronger than five fingers is a fist when you put them together. They got the five fingers, they don't have the fist.
Well, the offensive line is decimated, much like Lou said, and much like you just rattled off. Rewind 4 years ago or whatever it was, best offensive line in football.
Hands down.
Between them and the Raiders before Gruden took over, that was like the best offensive lines going. Since then, they've kind of had to piecemeal some things together. One of their guys retired, and much like you mentioned, Zach Martin get hurt last night. Collins hasn't even played, and Smith has been out, got hurt, missing the season. They, as a group, were one of the best that there was. They haven't been able to replace that yet. Mm-hmm. But with all that being said, you still got Ezekiel Elliott. You still have offensive linemen that are paid to do a job and get some push. Get me some push. A little bit. Protect the quarterback just enough. And I know Zeke fumbled twice, and maybe the first fumble was kind of messing with him, playing with him a little bit in his mind. Those are tough plays. A guy, Buda Baker, comes from behind and punches the ball out. You don't see him because you don't have eyes in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. So I understand that fumble. The second one, he just got stripped. Guy was stronger than him and pulled it away from him. And so you could look at Zeke on the sideline, and you could tell right there he pretty much was dejected. He was just like done at that point. Then he gets back in the game, and he's running out of bounds and protecting the ball with two hands. You can't run with two hands on a football. This isn't Little League. And so when you look at that, I think all of those sort of things started playing in Zeke's mind to a degree. But it's bigger than, with the Dallas Cowboys, it's bigger than those players that we just talked about. Mm-hmm. It's a organizational issue going on right now. It's a defensive issue. Mike Nolan is horrible.
Their defensive coordinator.
Horrible. I don't even know. I thought, in full transparency, as they like to say, I actually thought that he was going to come in and orchestrate a really nice defense.
Former head coach,
defensive coordinator that a lot of people, you know, they like in this league. They admire his skill set as a defensive coordinator. That's one of the reasons he was hired. But it hasn't worked out. It has the Dallas Cowboys defense looking as though they have no clue or no idea what the hell they're doing. I mean, when Kyler Murray could step back there and wind up like he's throwing the third and launch the ball from the outfield over their shoulders and drop the thing in the breadbasket of Christian Kirk, yeah, and Christian Kirk can't lose stride at all and walks into the end zone, that just goes to show you somebody's not seeing something from a formation standpoint, a tendency standpoint. And Cliff Kingsbury and the Arizona Cardinals knew that. They tried to go deep several times because they didn't trust the secondary to be defensive for the Dallas Cowboys. They were like, secondary's not good. We're going to bomb them.
Mm. Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. That's Key's thoughts. Always bringing it strong. What else do you expect? We want to hear your thoughts on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Or be old school. Give us a call, 888-SAY-ESPN. First time, long time, 888-729-3776. And we're simply asking you, who's more to blame for the debacle in Dallas? Jerry Jones or the guy Jerry hired as the head coach, Mike McCarthy, the Super Bowl champion? Early returns are in, mail-in voting. Early returns are in, 68% right now do say it's the fault of Jerry Jones. All of our guests, but again, hit us up. Change that percentage if you want. All of our guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including the one and only Paul Feinbaum in 1 minute. But first, let's go from A to Z. And from A to Z, we'll begin this morning with what else? A little MLB World Series. Game one tonight, Keys Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw on the bump with a 5.40. I'm not sure you're clapping for that statistic. 5.40 ERA in the World Series?
Yeah, that's old, though, man. That's old. We're not worried about the past. We're looking ahead.
The Dodgers' past has been great. 20 World Series appearances. This is their 21st. Tyler Glass now on the bump for the Rays.
He's going to be glass, all right.
We'll see if the Rays can shatter the glass ceiling and win that first World Series ever. Every game of the World Series is on ESPN Radio. Pre-game coverage.
Let's go, Dodgers!
And that's appropriate because there's going to be about 12,000 fans in the stands in Arlington. We'll see how many of those are chanting and hoping for a Dodger dog, maybe next season. For that, more baseball. Now, this is a story that just will not go away. The Astros' former general manager, Jeff Luhnow, again denying his role in the sign-stealing scandal, telling a local television station in Houston, KPRC-TV, that he was shocked when he was roped into the allegations, quote, shocked, and he essentially said he was willing to take a lie detector test to prove his innocence.
You know, my mother used to tell me as a kid, when you lie so much, you start believing your own lies. Mm. So I'm just saying.
Getting your head a little bit too much.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
We will talk to Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, and I promise you that's the first thing we're going to ask. I know it's a great day for seam heads everywhere. It's game one of the World Series, but this Astros story, until it goes away, who knows when it will. Maybe it's the gift that keeps on giving for sports
radio. I didn't know what they were doing. I had nothing to do with that. Okay.
Plausible deniability. We'll ask the commission about it. It's a big story. He'll join us this morning at 9:30 Eastern time. And on a college football note with Paul Feinbaum on deck, Penn State running back Journey Brown could miss the entire season because of a medical condition discovered during the offseason. This is actually a really serious story. You might recall the TCU quarterback Max Duggan had found out he had a heart condition after he took a coronavirus test. The team confirming that Monday night did Penn State. He's a redshirt junior from Meadville, Pennsylvania. They've already lost Micah Parsons. He's obviously opting out, going to the NFL. The Big Ten is back on Friday night when Illinois takes on Wisconsin. And this weekend, the Midwest portion of the country ready to explode with the return of Big Ten football. And we certainly wish Journey Brown the best. It is time for the best college football analysis everywhere. Paul Feinbaum is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Good morning, Paul. When the Nick Saban news broke on Friday that essentially he was moving closer to being able to coach again on Saturday, I was locked in listening to basically your entire program. It didn't become official until Legend joined, and then obviously it became an official Paul Feinbaum program. But take me through everything that happened that you saw from that first test and then those three subsequent tests to get him back out of the field Saturday night and another win over Georgia.
Hold on. Wait a minute, though, Paul. Are you going to work out or something? Because that's not your usual get up.
Little fleece.
You got a little sweat hoodie on or something.
Yeah, I am currently on the treadmill working out, watching this show. So thank you. The story broke about 5:45 Wednesday, Subin, and it was absolute shock. You understand the South very well, and it was like the world had come to an end, that something had happened to Nick Saban that's not supposed to. But by the next day, you started getting some weird signals because there was some pushback from Alabama. And by Friday, when they announced the Thursday test, you knew they already knew the Friday test because the test come back by 1 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. So Saturday was not a surprise. Everyone knew Saban was going to be there. But what he did was just light that team up, especially at halftime. And you have to wonder what would have happened had he not been there. Would the second half had still been the same? Open for conversation, but it just enhanced the Saban legacy as if it needed any more enhancing, and it was the biggest win of the year in college football.
Paul, Rex Chapman tweeted out that it was a embarrassment, terrible message being sent by Nick Saban to coach that game on Saturday. What's your feelings about that?
Yeah, you know, I love Rex Chapman, but I'm not sure I understand his logic there. Nick Saban had a false positive, no different than you or me or anybody else. It could have happened to all, and it has happened to a lot of people. He didn't say on Wednesday, this is a joke, this is ridiculous. He went home. He did what you're supposed to do. And he didn't leave his house until Saturday. So I don't know how anyone could say that. He had three more tests after that, Keyshawn. And you know, if you want to have an FBI investigation into it, that's fine. But he was approved. And I understand the skepticism by some people. But I really don't believe it in this case. Nick Saban, to me, has been one of the more responsible people in sports in relation to COVID. And in public life, I should say. He has worn a mask. He has preached the message. So I think it's outrageous for anyone to cast doubt on the veracity of those tests. Without any justification either.
Yeah. Paul, the Big Ten starts this Saturday. Who are the real contenders coming out of that conference for the national title?
Yeah. Key, this is all about Ohio State. And I think they are way ahead of everyone else. And you mentioned the Penn State situation a minute ago. They've lost a couple of really key players. Maybe they're obviously their best player. And I think, they're Penn State's one shot is in 2 weeks when they take on Ohio State on Halloween. That's an epic game. That's one of the most anticipated games of the year in college football, the whiteout at Happy Valley. So that they have a shot. I don't think they can do it, but they have a shot. But other than that, you have to really search. Is it Wisconsin, Iowa? Can Jim Harbaugh do something that he doesn't look like he's capable of doing? in beating Ohio State. So quite frankly, I think the Buckeyes don't have a lot of competition in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they have some COVID concerns as well in the Big Ten. Jeff Brohm, the Purdue coach, is not going to be out there when they take on the Iowa Hawkeyes this weekend in the Big Ten opener for both. And that's where I want to go with next with Paul Feinbaum joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. If a player tests positive, Paul, in the Big Ten, this is just unique to the Big Ten. They would miss 21 days, and essentially you're trying to play eight games in 8 weeks. So let's just call that three games. You're going to miss 3 weeks of the season. Other conferences are a little bit more lax. We obviously saw Saban get back out on the field Saturday, but obviously he's not a player, a distinction there. What do you make of that sort of time a player would have to miss nearly 50% of the season when other leagues have such less stringent policies?
Well, let's talk for a second about why they did that. All we need to do is go back to August 11th, Zubin, and the Big Ten voted not to play college football. And it wasn't even close. It was 11-3. So what happened was when everything started to unwind, the Big Ten presidents, and there's two epidemiologists in the Big Ten at Michigan and Michigan State, I think they said, okay, you guys want to come back? We are going to put some serious teeth into the protocols. And that's why you got that. It seems unfair. And if a key player, let's say Justin Fields, the best player in the Big Ten, gets knocked out with COVID, that very well could wreck his team's chances of winning the title. So it seems unfair, but it was the only way back. And I still think you have to keep your eye on the Big Ten. While COVID has interrupted about 10 or 15% of games across the country, the Big Ten, I think, is going to be the most difficult in terms of and the Pac-12 when they finally
come back.
Because the presidents, I still don't think they really wanted to come back. They got forced into it by public opinion and by coaches. So they are going to be far more stringent than anyone else in the sport.
Paul, I think I heard right yesterday on SportsCenter you saying that BYU was the fourth best team in the country. What impressed you most about them? Because I haven't had a chance to see them play.
Yeah, typical Keyshawn waking up, hearing half the truth. And that's what they're saying about you in Dallas right now after those eviscerating comments a few minutes ago. Keyshawn, they ask you do SportsCenter all the time. They ask you to do a top four. And I couldn't use Ohio State because they had not played yet. I couldn't, but I didn't think I should. So I'm trying to figure out who are the four best teams in the country, and is it Notre Dame? They just barely beat Louisville 12-7 or some ridiculous score. North Carolina just lost. So there really wasn't. I just thought I'd have a little fun. We try to do that in sports every once in a while and throw BYU a bone. I mean, they've done really well. They have beat Navy in the opener. They beat Houston. They're not one of the four best teams in the country, but I said it will be their probably last chance to be in here. And also having a little fun with the holy war out there between BYU and Utah. Remember last year, all the Utah fans were acting like they belonged in the college football playoff, and then they got their head knocked off in the I think it was the Big 12, the Pac-12 championship game. I can't remember. It's so hard to keep up with the Pac-12 because they're like a little dot. They're like on the map. You see
punches,
them and then you don't.
You and these punches at the Pac-12. Just because of that?
Well, hey,
Oregon and USC going to wind up in the national championship. Watch. Just because you keep messing with us.
The league I cover is always – by the way, Zubin, can we get the new debate two-minute mute button for Keyshawn when I'm trying to make a point?
We'll have to get that going on Thursday night. That's for sure. We'll test it out for you here early this morning. And to Paul's point, BYU's got a great young quarterback in Wilson, and they have tremendous history at the position with Ty Detmer and Robbie Bosco, if you're old enough for those guys. We're going back.
But BYU, might as well go Jim McMahon.
Jim McMahon. Right. They got a great history. Paul, make sure you knock it up to about 8 on the incline on the treadmill, and we'll see you next week. You didn't sweat through the entire interview. The dude's been on the treadmill the entire interview. Thank you, Paul.
All right, Paul.
We'll see him on the SEC Network every weekday afternoon.
Paul better leave the Pac-12 alone.
Taking some shots.
God.
Some body blows.
The SEC, they hide behind Alabama, and he just, oh, God.
All right, real quick, we've been asking you, Cowboys, who's to blame, Jerry or Mike McCarthy, first-year head coach? Jason in Virginia Beach, what do you say? You're on ESPN Radio. You got somebody else you want to take. You with us?
Jason?
I'm here, buddy. What's going on, man?
Who's to blame?
It's got a little bit of both. Both of them. I mean, we all know Jerry Jones. He's had issues as a general manager and the owner for years. But Mike McCarthy, first-year head coach, it's not looking good. And Mike Nolan definitely isn't working out with all that talent.
That's you could kind of spread it around a little bit. See, I always argue about Jerry Jones, the general manager. They've always, in my opinion, have drafted well. They've gotten talent. They've signed guys off the scrap heap. They've always done those things. They just can't put it together. People always argue about Jerry, the general manager. Mm-hmm. Jerry, the general manager. But you can't argue with the talent that he drafts or the talent that he brings in at value. You can't argue with that. It's just who's coaching it and what are they getting out of it on the field.
You want to hear the best stat about the Cowboys all season? Knock this one out at the water cooler or on your Zoom call when you log on to work today at Zoom. Listen to this. I'll say it slow so you can write it down. I know Cowboys fans are millions across the country. Listen to this, Key. Dallas has allowed 14 passing touchdowns and 10 rushing touchdowns through the first six games. 14 through the air, 10 on the ground. That's a lot through six games. The last team to do it, give up that much, the 05 49ers. Head coach?
Mike Nolan.
Offensive coordinator?
Mike McCarthy.
How about that? How about that? Put that on your Zoom call today and win the argument. That's some dreary stuff for your Cowboy fan.
You know, man, if I get a head coaching job, I'm going to hire you, Zubin. That's what that relationship is. You hired me, I'll hire you. We'll scratch each other's back. That's what we're seeing. They trust one another, and these are the results.
Speaking of results, the final result that season was 4-12, and if the Cowboys end up that way, we'll see what happens in Big D. By the way, that was Alex Smith's rookie year in San Francisco. We'll talk more about
that. Oh, Alex, that was the year that Mike McCarthy didn't want Aaron Rodgers, right?
That's correct. Is that okay. Right? Remember, because they took Alex number one and Aaron Feld into the 20s. Still to come, the return of Alex Smith from being the first overall pick to not being able to use the bathroom by himself. Amazing words on an amazing journey next on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right. So obviously Key's real rankings fluctuate if you're just joining this for the first time. Sometimes it's the top nine, the top six. This week it's Key's real rankings, and it's because it's his rankings. He gets to determine how many teams are on there. This week we are going with seven. Last week's number seven team was the Tennessee Titans. This week,
number seven, Green Bay.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
They took a bit of a tumble, right?
They went from
two to seven, but a lot of teams passed them over based on their play against the Bucs. Now I'm questioning and wondering exactly what type of team is Green Bay. I don't think that they'll lose a number of games this year, more than maybe three, but even the way that they played against Tampa Bay gets me to wondering, are they really for real? Now, Chicago within that conference and within that division is right there next to them.
Next up.
Number six, New Orleans.
We don't do what you think.
New Orleans had a bye. So they just sit tight right where they're at. I don't really necessarily move them. They're in the four spot last week. They're in the four spot again. I mean, they moved into the spot because they didn't play, and now they're going to play this week. So let's see if they win or lose and get back into a higher ranking.
Top five. Here we go.
Number five, Baltimore.
Big trust. Woo, woo.
In the fifth spot is Baltimore. Now, look, the Ravens deserve to be right where they're at. They're a football team that is still trying to learn the passing game. They're winning games, you know, on defense, and Lamar Jackson doing what has always done, which is run the football. Every now and then he makes a decent throw, and you can win games like that long term. I just think that he needs to continue to elevate his passing game so they can take the next step as a football team.
So the Ravens move up a spot. Number four.
Number four, Tennessee.
I've been doing too many curls, so I gotta lay out the arms.
Start believing in them, right? They were number seven a week ago. Now they have jumped three spots to number four. Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, the defense, Vrabel coaching them up. They've done a tremendous job at knowing what to do against their opponents, getting the football into A.J. Brown's hands when they want to pass the ball. You can't argue with their record. You can't argue with their play. They have a recipe for success. They're portable. When the weather starts to change and they start to get into December and it starts to get cold, all they got to do is turn around, hand the ball to 6'3", 247-pound Derrick Henry, and they can run from there.
No doubt about it. Who's next?
Number three, Kansas City.
I'm going to go get the biggest cheeseburger you've ever seen. Might be a double.
They moved to number three from the fifth spot last week because they took care of business. They went in last night and beat up on the Bills and showed us that the Bills may not be for real at all, that Josh Allen is not an MVP candidate. And the guy who is the MVP in this league as of right now, who has a trophy in Patrick Mahomes, passed for 200 and some yards, a couple touchdowns. They ran for 200 and some yards. They played defense. They created turnovers. What else is there for them to do? Andy Reid is showing that he's found out how to win in Kansas City and get to championship levels unlike he did in Philadelphia.
Who's almost at the top?
Number two, Pittsburgh.
The last game was the last game. This one was just
Pittsburgh, man. They win ugly. That's always been the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, one of those, I feel like I'm repeating myself. Run the football, play defense, allow your quarterback to make the throws that they need to make for you to win football games and not turn the ball over. And that is what they're doing. Chase Claypool has all of a sudden emerged as the number one target for Ben Roethlisberger within this offense. The defense is playing well, even though Devin Bush is not in their lineup anymore. I like the Steelers and Mike Tomlin, top five coach in my opinion.
I'm going to make up a word. The realest of all.
And number one, Seattle.
Mr. Unlimited.
Now, Seattle goes to Arizona this week to take on the Cardinals. We'll see what happens there. The Cardinals coming off a big win against the Dallas Cowboys. I think Seattle will win the football game, but if they don't, and they lose to Arizona, Arizona's going to find themselves on this ranking board real soon because then they'll be becoming one of those real football teams. And I know a lot of people saying, well, what happened to the Bears? Doesn't mean the Bears aren't eight. I just want them to show me a little sub because I still got the Nick Foles kind of, you know, I still got that Nick Foles thing hanging over me a little bit because it's one of those things that will he turn back into a pumpkin real soon? That's kind of why the Bears aren't sitting somewhere in their top seven.
Indeed. Very apropos here with Halloween, of course, just 11 days away. So right now it's like the old relationship. I'm all right dating Nick Foles. I'm not ready to get engaged or marry Nick Foles just yet.
I'm just, you know, the Bears record is what it is. I mean, you can't argue with their record. You can't argue with any of the success that they've had. They have that recipe for success. Run the ball. Don't turn the ball over on offense. Don't allow your quarterback to put you in bad situations. Get the football to your playmakers. They have that, Z. But I almost feel like I'm going to turn on the light and I'm going to wake up. That's what they have you feeling like. And I felt that way about San Francisco last year, and it never happened. And San Francisco had a chance to win the Super Bowl if Jimmy Garoppolo connects with Emmanuel Sanders, maybe instead of Kansas City, they're having a parade in downtown San Francisco. But that didn't happen. And I feel that way about Chicago, where I'm just kind of like, I'm right there, but I'm like still on the fence.
We'll see. Keys Real Rankings got a fresh look this week as you saw all the teams flipping orders. A fresh look is brought to you by Sport Clips. Now on deck with text alert Sport Clips. It's good to be a guy. Still to come after nearly 2 years and 17 surgeries. What was the lowest point of Alex Smith's recovery from a near amputation? The QB with the answer next on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Alex, a couple weeks ago, you're activated. Coach Rivera says he's got no trepidation to put you into the game if need be. The Washington football team is playing the Rams. Key's watching the game. Second quarter, Jalen Ramsey pops Kyle Allen. And Key and everybody else watching thought to themselves, there is no way Kyle Allen's coming back in for the next snap. So here you are for the first time in 693 days after one of the most incredible recoveries in NFL history, injury-wise. What was it like to simply get back on the field?
Yeah, tough to put into a few words. You know, for me, it was something that obviously I'd been working for and, you know, knew was creeping closer and closer. Certainly, obviously, being the two that day, I knew the reality of, you know, being a play away. You know, part of me, though, I'd be lying. I still thought part of me thought that day would never happen, you know, that I would never get the opportunity to go do it. And I was the same way. I was standing right there. I heard the hit on Kyle and knew it was a good one, and kind of thankful in a way, because it was like just it kicked in. I ran over, grabbed my helmet. I didn't have much time to think about anything. You know, got a couple throws in, got a couple snaps in, and next thing you know, I was in the huddle calling a play. And for me, that feeling is indescribable. That's why I came back. That's why, you know, I put in so many hours and you know, worked so hard is for that feeling again. And it was amazing to get out there and mix it up a little bit. And obviously for me to be able to take that hit again and kind of put that behind me was really reassuring.
Alex, from the perspective of a person, a human, a player, a father, a husband, I know you're all those things. Take this anywhere you want. What was the lowest point in the recovery process?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it flashes back when I was honestly, when my leg was basically bolted straight. I had metal rods sticking out of it, and I was stuck in a wheelchair for months. Couldn't go anywhere. I was helpless. I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself. You know, if my wife basically had to do everything for me, and if she wasn't there, my 9-year-old could help me a little bit, get around the house, but I was basically helpless, and spent a lot of days just sitting there wondering what I'd ever be able to do again. You know, and obviously then I was just dreaming about walking, you know, being able to go for a walk with my wife, be able to stand up and play with my kids, you know, and chase him around a little bit. And, you know, from there, the football was the furthest thing from my mind, but, you know, wondering if I'd ever be able to do any of that stuff ever again. And I've been lucky. I've been lucky that this thing has progressed to where it is, and I'm still chasing it and doing something that, like I said, I had some serious doubt, obviously, that I'd ever be able to do anything like this and step on a field again to be practicing football every day. Obviously thankful, so thankful for the way things are and for the opportunity I have.
Alex, with all the emotions and everything just running so high, how are you able to focus in getting back on the field?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know that feeling. Like, for me, I felt like I was a rookie all over again, you know, doing it all over again. That feeling, that rush, butterflies, you know, for me, feeling alive, the range of emotion leading up to that, and certainly that in that moment was amazing. And for me, I feel like I practiced a lot of that. Can you quiet your mind, right? I mean, you got a lot of distractions going on. Can I lock it in on what I need to do? And for me, I feel like I've tried to practice that and perfect that my entire career, but certainly I don't think I've ever been challenged like I was in that moment. You know, and so for me, that was it. Call the play, and I got to go do my job, part of the team, and I got to hold up my end.
Alex, man, I know you've been tackled a million different ways by a million different players, but this one in particular by Aaron Donald, what was going through your mind when he landed on you?
Yeah, I mean, at that time, you're just playing. You know, that's the great thing about football. When the whistle blows, you know, your instincts take over and you just go out there and play. I did realize at the one point that someone had jumped on my back. I didn't realize it was Aaron in that moment. You know, for me, if there was ever a better stress test for my leg, I don't think you could have found a better test. And obviously, Aaron's a heck of a player and a little baptism by fire for me, so to speak, getting back out there.
Alex, how important was it to see your family in the stands when you took the field on that particular Sunday?
Yeah, so thankful for that. You know, the first two home games, no one was allowed to be there. And then, you know, we got obviously when coach decided to make the change at quarterback, and I knew I was going to be the two and dressing. And then it wasn't until after that we found out that our family could be there. And so for my wife and kids who have been there through everything with me, the thick of it, like I said, the days in the wheelchair pushing me around, the wheelchair van to go anywhere, my wife, you know, I had a PICC line to my heart where she's administering my IVs, you know, multiple times a day. So my antibiotics, sorry. So it's been crazy. And so for them to be there with me and to kind of share that with me, especially my wife, was really, really special, especially in the sense that they were the only ones there. It was like a high school game. You know, they were about 12 rows up. I could hear them cheering in the stands. So that it was very cool.
Alex, you're the eighth different quarterback that's played for Washington here in the last couple of years. The team's had a lot of changes front office-wise, coaching, organizationally. Everybody, I think, kind of knows about that. It's been a tough offseason, and you indicated the record isn't exactly where you thought the team would be at this particular point. Coach Rivera seemingly has taken charge of the entire organization here from the top down in his first year on the job. What has he specifically done to try to turn this organization around, in your opinion?
I mean, I think the first thing was just steady the ship, you know, be that influence that steadies the ship in all areas and to allow us to really kind of focus on football. Now, he's been pretty hamstrung with the circumstances, as all, I think, first year coaches have this year with COVID, you know, no off season. They're dealing with crazy restrictions and compliances. And obviously we're all just trying to get through this. And so, yeah, I think with that, like I said, to steady the ship with all the noise going on outside, really, can we eliminate all those distractions and focus on football? And for us as a young team right now, really about going out there and taking advantage every day and get better every day. You know, we are in a division that is still wide open at this point, but for us, you know, about going out there, and obviously you got to continue to improve. That's all it's about right now.
Say, man, here you go. Now that you're back, how much longer do you want to do this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And for me, it's down the line. I'm enjoying putting on my helmet every day, the cleats, the shoulder pads, and practicing right now. It's something, like I said, that I thought I had some dark days wondering what I'd ever be able to do again. And I'm loving going out there and competing every day. Don't know where it'll end. Enjoying it right now and trying to make the most of it.
Hey, Alex, last thing. Tell us about that shirt you're wearing with the word attitude.
Yeah, this is the Attitude is Free shirt, obviously, in a little burgundy and gold. For me, it's just a company that represents mindset, positivity. You know, and for me, I talk a lot about, I think, controlling what you can control. And this was even before my injury, just as a quarterback, and I think canceling out the noise. And for me, the number one thing you do control is your attitude. And for me, I think, you know, coming back from my experience in this injury, a lot of people questioning why I'm even doing this. And for me, it's about living. You know, I like I said, I spent a long time not being able to do anything, and I got a chance now to do more than I ever thought I was going to, and I'm going to take advantage of it, living every day. And for me, it's about that, and not taking it for granted, and making the most of the opportunity I have.
You know, we had Joe Theismann, the great Washington football team Super Bowl quarterback, on our show the very first day Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin started August 17th. That was 24 days before the NFL season even began. And Theismann told us on day one, the comeback player of the year award is already wrapped up. Never mind the pencil. Start engraving Alex Smith's name into that trophy right now. Key, you said you would never come back under circumstances like this, just to prove that money isn't the most important thing in the world. He talked about playing with his kids, just walking around, going to the bathroom by himself. Alex Smith has made in his NFL career $108,825,000. And he just wants to, as he said, just put that helmet on again. Pretty amazing story.
No, as I would tell Alex offline when we had our pre-conversation, is that that's just, you know, I tip my hat off to you. But me, I'm good, dog. and I understand. I mean, he loves the game, and he doesn't want to go out that way, you know. And so I get it. I just couldn't do it. I mean, it's just the hard work and the pain and the agony that he had to go through just to be able to walk again, let alone try to play football.
It's very well said. Still to come, a contender and a pretender on Monday Night Football. And we're not talking about what happened in Dallas.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.